On today's episode of ESC 101, we're diving into the life of a conductor at the Eurovision Song Contest. Join us as we learn about one of Eurovision's most unique conductors, Jean Claudric, the man who holds the honor of conducting the only North African entry in the contest. This is ESC 101. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to ESC 101, your home of Eurovision history and obscurity. This is the podcast where we take a look at the Eurovision Song Contest throughout the years to uncover the story behind the world's largest international televised music competition. Welcome to episode 24. My name is Alexander. I'm sorry it took this long to cover a conductor in the Eurovision Song Contest. With so many topics to choose from, I get lost in the array of people and facts that are just so interesting, whether it's clowns, wombles, Spanish opera houses, postcards, or even Eurovision on the moon. But of course, today's episode is about a conductor at the Eurovision Song Contest. There hasn't been a conductor at the contest since 1998, and most modern Eurovision fans don't give much thought into who conducted the orchestra for the contest in the 20th century. I'll admit, I don't even usually give them much thought either, unless I see them on camera waving their arms like a toddler having a tantrum at the grocery store. But on occasion, there are conductors that gracefully conduct the orchestra into musical perfection, and this week's feature conductor certainly fits into the graceful category of conductors. I am, of course, referring to Jean Claudric, the man who conducted for several countries at the contest and who has a distinguished career in music. Materials referenced in today's episode come from two interviews, one in 2011 by Bass Tucker for their own blog, and another in 2017 by Philippe Benel for Tutti magazine. Of course, links to the source material can be found on the show notes page on our website. Let's go ahead and dive into the life of Eurovision conductor Jean Claudric. Jean Claudric, known as Jean-Claude Bacri, was born on September 13, 1930 in Bab el Oued, Alger, in French Algeria. His father was a bank manager and commercial traveler. He has an older brother named Roland, who was a well-known journalist and poet in France, and he has an uncle named Marcel, who was a professional actor who helped Jean-Claude out financially when pursuing music. Jean-Claude had a passion for music and ended up teaching himself how to play the piano using the one that his mother had inherited. He ended up quitting secondary school, taking up a job as a clerk to earn money to help pay for his entry into the École Nationale des Beaux-Arts, studying music. It was through the school that he had found himself playing in amateur orchestras and ballrooms. When he reached his 20th birthday, he was called into military service and joined the 5th Region Air Force Band. However, a small problem occurred. The captain of the regiment refused to have a piano as part of the band. Apparently, the military band played his music while marching, so I thought to myself, well, yeah, trying to roll a piano down the street as you play is impractical. Now, you could mount the keyboard onto a flatbed, but if the captain wanted everyone marching, well, that wouldn't work. But then I came across a New York Times article on Harold Rhodes, the inventor of a portable piano, which consisted of a 29-note keyboard using aluminum tubes to make a xylophone-styled instrument. He called it the Army Air Corps Lap Model Piano, and this was invented in 1942. Jean-Claude turned 20 in 1950, so portable pianos did technically exist, although I have no idea how common they were. So I call shenanigans on the captain of that regiment. It could have been theoretically possible to have a piano in a marching band. But alas, it was not meant to be, and Jean-Claude instead accepted the challenge of learning a new instrument. Apparently, he accepted the challenge quite enthusiastically as he entered the Algiers Conservatory for a year to study the French horn, as well as other musical topics such as chamber music, counterpoint, solfège, and harmony. He eventually ended up as the horn soloist in the symphony orchestra of the French Air Force in Algeria, and once he was discharged from service, he worked as a freelance artist substituting for other players in various orchestras while also playing the piano in a cabaret at a beach resort town. In the 1950s, Jean-Claude gained the attention of Radio Algier, and he was asked to become the pianist for a band which played there. The radio director at the time, Jacques Redson, apparently had beef with a Jean-Paul Bacri, no relation to Jean-Claude. Yet when the director heard Jean-Claude Bacri, images of Jean-Paul manifested, and he absolutely refused to work with him solely based on the name. Talk about discrimination. But Jean-Claude was not to be deterred, and he marched right into Redson's office and demanded an explanation. Upon seeing Jean-Claude in person, the director realized his mistake, but remained adamant on the name and refused to work with anyone with a name so close resembling that terrible piano player. Of course, Jean-Claude hatched a brilliant plan. Over in the United States of America, musicians were altering their names to make it more catchy and smooth-sounding. Musicians like Michael Gesna changed their name to Mickey Gesney, Joseph Fordales into Joe Ford, and so on. Thus, Jean-Claude decided to alter his name to be Jean-Claudric, combining the Claude and the last three letters of his name in an anagram style, and thus, the name Jean-Claudric was born. Jean worked at Radio Algier for a few years until 1955, when he moved from the sunny warm sands of French Algeria to the harsh cold winters of Paris, where he was relatively unknown. He had difficulty getting into the jazz scene, and so he resolved himself to find every opportunity he could find, working as a music teacher, piano accompanist in bars and cabarets, and arranging music for B-list music artists. Jean's breakthrough into music would occur in 1958. While accompanying singer-slash-actress Lucette Raleigh, Jean gained the attention of a young singer named Jean Siegfried. They had chatted a few times previously, and one evening he was in a bit of a situation and confided in Jean. The translated quote reads, quote, "Jean, I'm overjoyed because I'm going to record in 2 weeks at Decca RCA, and I have the choice of the arranger. But what is an arranger?" Jean-Claudric then explained what an arranger is and told the artist that he happened to be one, which the artist apparently had no idea he did, and he excitedly hired him to do the arrangement for the song. How serendipitous. Apparently, the arrangement was so impressive, the sound engineer working on the project phoned the record company manager to come down to listen to the music for himself. And he did so. And upon hearing the musical perfection of Jean-Claudric's arrangement, went to ask Jean if he wrote the music, to which Jean said yes. The manager then asked Jean to go to his office after the session and asked him if he wanted to work on the next Maurice Chevalier record. Apparently, Jean was a huge fan of Maurice, who was over 70 years old at the time, and was aiming to modernize his style of music. Of course, Jean jumped at the chance to work with someone he admired, and his career as an arranger launched with great success, with other artists calling the company to work with Jean on their projects. Throughout his career, he worked with a number of artists which continued to expand his already impressive portfolio, including becoming involved with several Eurovision artists and entries. While he was only involved in Eurovision a total of 6 times in various roles, he did work with Eurovision artists outside the contest, including Jean-Claude Pascal, Franz Gall, Gignole Cinquetti, Romuald, Severin, Avi Toledano, Michel Thor, and probably a few others that I've left off the list. Suffice to say, his music career expanded in the 1960s and 70s very quickly. His rising profile also caused another conundrum when working for Claude Carrière, who wanted to produce a record for a young singer named Annie Chancel. The arrangement was just as successful as his other arrangements, but apparently the producer wanted to disassociate the arrangement with Jean's name in France because they wanted someone who was unknown. They basically wanted an anonymous yet talented arranger so people would buy the record not because of who arranged it, but because of the singer and the raw musical talent itself. Jean had no idea what name to offer them, so they came up with the name of Sam Clayton. How on earth they went from Jean to Sam, I have no idea. Of course, the record sold well, and from what I understand from the interviews, Jean simply let it be and moved on. In the 1960s, Jean was frequently commissioned to conduct live orchestras with other artists, serving as the musical director of hundreds of shows in Paris's Olympia Music Hall. He also served as the resident conductor of the International Mediterranean Song Festival for several years. A small pre-Eurovision connection occurred in 1964 when he won the first prize in Las Palmas de Mallorca with a song interpreted by Frida Baccara, the same Frida who would be one of the winners of the Eurovision Song Contest in 1969. Jean's official involvement in Eurovision would begin in 1966, where he served as the studio and live orchestration arranger for the French entry, Chez Nous by Dominique Walter, which, if you remember from episode 20 covering the Eurovision Travel Guide episode for France, I had several issues with that song, and it ended up placing next to last, only gaining a single point. Of course, with this entry being potentially Jean's worst ever arrangement, he conveniently forgets about that entry, which says a lot about what he thought of the song. Jean would return to Eurovision in 1971, this time going full force, serving as the studio and orchestral arranger, as well as the conductor for the entry representing Luxembourg, Pom 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 by Monique Melson. Now, I'm not going to comment on every entry that conductors were involved in, otherwise this episode and others like it would drag on for hours, especially for conductors with extensive participation records. Suffice to say, I didn't like this entry either, and the outfit needs to be burned immediately. In terms of the brief starting moment where you can see him conduct, he seemed to do it well. I know next to nothing about conducting music, but he kept himself tight and ensured he moved to direct the various portions of the orchestra. Despite my distaste for this entry, Jean-Claude Rick had a wonderful time, and I'll read out the segment of the 2011 interview from the conductor's blog to paint a picture for you. Quote, "That first Eurovision was very pleasant. I don't mind staying in a five-star hotel for a week, you know. You are always taken good care of in a contest such as this. Moreover, being in a foreign country with a tight team of a conductor, a singer, and a background vocalist all trying to achieve the same goal was inspirational. For me as a conductor, it was interesting to see what the orchestra musicians in another country were capable of. Communication with the orchestra was not really a problem, although my English is very bad indeed. Fortunately, the language of music doesn't have a very rich vocabulary. Please, two bars before B. Simple instructions like that were enough to get what I wanted from the musicians. The event was also quite important for me professionally. To be able to meet colleagues from all over Europe, to have my arrangement heard by viewers and listeners all over Europe, and to conduct live on TV for an audience of millions of spectators were things that are momentous in a musician's career." Of course, he conducted the Luxembourgish entry that year, but Jean had his sights on working with France at the Eurovision Song Contest. However, he had to wait until 1973 to get that chance, thanks to the French broadcaster finally modernizing themselves with their conductor of choice. From 1956 all the way up until 1972, France selected Franck Purcell to conduct their entries every single year except for two, in 1957 and 1968. Franck also served as the musical director in 1959 and 1961 when France hosted the contest. His record spans 23 Eurovision entries representing six different countries. However, by 1972, Franck's reputation was getting stale and artists flat out refused to work with him. He was quickly becoming yesterday's news, and the French broadcaster decided to toss Franck to the wayside, and they brought in Jean-Claude Rick, who at this point had a more than impressive record at arranging songs, other than those two Eurovision entries, which we'll conveniently forget about. The year is 1973, and Jean-Claude Rick serves as the newest musical director of the French pre-selection. He arranged all six competing entries and went on to conduct the French entry that year entitled Sans Toi by Martine Clemenceau. We are very fortunate that there is more footage of the conductor in this entry because, my goodness, it's a goldmine of pure silliness. Again, I know nothing about conducting music, maybe this is how you're supposed to do it, but the way that Jean-Claude Rick is conducting this entry is hilarious. Towards the end of the song, the camera shows the conductor and he's doing a little dance while keeping his upper arms practically glued to his body, waving only the forearms. He slowly becomes more expressive, literally lifting his whole body up as he conducts the end of the entry, and I find it amusing to watch. Maybe this is how good conductors conduct, but from where I'm sitting, this just kind of looks childish. Of course, in 1973, each conductor welcomed the next one on, and Jean had the honor of welcoming Eurovision's second female conductor, Nurit Hirsch, who conducted for Israel. Jean, being the perfect gentleman that he is, takes the hand of Nurit and kisses it gently, wishing her good luck as she goes on to debut Israel at the contest. France placed 15th that year, getting 65 votes, and surprise, surprise, when things don't go well, Jean begins making excuses for the poor result. Although this time time he actually recalls the experience. He wasn't happy with the result and tries to avoid responsibility by claiming, quote, it was not my song. However, he did accept the responsibility of the lack of success being a team responsibility, so I guess there's baby steps. Sean attempted to return to Eurovision for France in 1976, composing and conducting one of the pre-selection entries entitled Ne dis pas que tu m'aimes by Harmony 5. However, that entry placed third, and he ultimately had to wait until 1980, when the Eurovision dream of a lifetime called out to him. Literally. After conducting a television show, Jean came home late, around 1 in the morning. Apparently, while he was away, his wife got a phone call, and they left a message to have Jean call them back immediately. She only wrote the phone number down and told Jean about the call. Being 1 in the morning and exhausted after a day's work, Jean was going to leave it until the next day, but his wife was adamant that he call them back immediately, like it was a life-or-death situation, and in kind of a way it was. Jean called the mysterious phone number and was connected to Morocco's ambassador to France, where he practically begged Jean to come work for Morocco in their debut at the Eurovision Song Contest. Jean was intrigued, especially since Morocco would be the first North African country to participate in the contest, and his curiosity led him to agreeing to become the arranger and conductor for their entry in 1980. Now, I'll be fully transparent, I absolutely adore the Moroccan entry in 1980. It is my favorite Moroccan entry, although considering that Morocco only sent one entry to Eurovision, that doesn't mean very much. I love the obscure countries in Eurovision, which basically includes Morocco and their one entry, Serbia and Montenegro with their two entries, and microstates Andorra, Monaco, and San Marino. I have no idea why, but I just love the weird oddities, both geographic and Eurovision related. Morocco certainly fits into the latter category, serving as the only North African country to participate in the contest. Jean doesn't know why Morocco chose him, but he speculates that it was either because of his career at Radio Algier, which was listened to in Morocco, or from his work with Enrico Macias, who was popular in North Africa. Sadly, Jean didn't travel to Morocco to record the song, they apparently did so in Paris. But what's interesting here is something that is overlooked in most Eurovision history circles. Jean-Claude Dirc has a Jewish background, and he was asked to arrange and conduct an Arabic country's entry at the contest. If you know anything about current geopolitical slash religious tensions in North Africa and the Middle East, you can put two and two together. However, Jean's experience was a bit more peaceful, as he was regularly invited by Arab singers to write arrangements for them. Jean arranged the Moroccan entry Bitakat Hob, sung by Samira Ben Said, and he wrote the arrangement in the style of Enrico Macias, the artist he worked with in North Africa. Morocco ended up coming next to last that year, and this time I don't think it was deserved in the slightest. Morocco was robbed of its proper place, and should have gotten 70 points rather than 7. But alas, Morocco was disheartened by the low score, gaining a lowly 7 points from Italy. Thank goodness it didn't get a null point. And so, to soothe my broken heart, and to soothe yours, here is a sample of the Moroccan entry from 1980. I love that entry so much. Apparently the musicians did too. In the 2011 interview, Jean recalled the following, quote, "Well, the musicians in the orchestra really liked my score. These oriental sounds were totally different to what they usually got to play, and for them, this variation was attractive. Most of those Eurovision orchestras were excellent, consisting of the best music professionals available. The girl who sang the song, Samira, was very good indeed. It was obvious that the Moroccan delegation had high expectations of this festival, and they were extremely disappointed with things turned out far worse than anticipated." Jean-Claude Dirc would return to the contest as a conductor for the final time in 1982, this time for Luxembourg with their entry Cours après le temps by Svetlana. The entry ended up placing 6th, gaining 78 points, and Jean brings up an interesting perspective working as an arranger and conductor. In most of Jean's work, he collaborated with artists that would return to him and who got to know one another through their work. There was an understanding of musical styles and a bond between artist and arranger would form, knowing their musical abilities and style choices in order to create the optimal working experience. For the Eurovision Song Contest, artists were changing constantly, and apparently he only ever worked with Svetlana the one time, never meeting her again after the contest. Usually Jean would tour with the artist for a limited time and form bonds with the people that he worked with. But in this instance, it was his reputation which pulled him into the contest, and it felt more contractual compared to his previous work. However, it wasn't the chaotic work environment of the contest in 1982 which made a lasting impression on Jean, rather it was an unrelated event. His brother wanted a souvenir from England, and he wanted a Sherlock Holmes hat. Obliging his brother, Jean went to a hat shop. The only problem was his English was terrible, and when he tried to say Sherlock Holmes to the clerk, he ended up saying it with a very thick accent, saying, "Sherlock Holmes." Of course, the clerk was confused, and it took them half an hour before they finally understood what he wanted. He felt accomplished at reaching the diplomatic impasse into the English language and obtained a hat for his brother. Unfortunately, there isn't as much footage of Jean in 1982, and the footage we have is shrouded in blurry darkness. There's much less movement compared to 1973, and the song overall was okay. After 1982, Jean-Claude Dric would never again return to the Eurovision Song Contest, and would spend the rest of his days dabbling in various music projects. Or so we thought. It turns out, Eurovision came calling for Jean one final time. Again, quite literally. In a repeat of Morocco in 1980, another country called Jean and begged him to arrange their entry in the Eurovision Song Contest, but oddly enough not to be the conductor. The country calling this time was Turkey, and the year was 1990. However, things turned scandalous as Jean's arrangement was snubbed for another one. Buckle up for the dramatic tale of Gözlerinin Hapsindeyim, the Turkish entry in 1990. It was just an ordinary day for Jean-Claude Dric, the memories of Eurovision's past a distant blip in his extensive music career. He received a phone call from Turkey from the winner of the Turkish selection for Eurovision named Kayahan. His entry apparently was written in the style of Enrico Macias, who we mentioned earlier for Morocco's entry, and Claude's reputation with that style of music clearly reached Kayahan as he asked Jean to write the arrangement. Jean was happy to do it, and asked Kayahan when he would come down to Paris. Kayahan, presumably laughing at this absurd notion of going halfway across Europe to record a song, demanded that Jean would come to Istanbul instead. Jean said no. Not wanting to take no for an answer, Kayahan engaged in some borderline stalker behavior, and began calling Jean multiple times a day, begging him to come to Turkey and be the arranger. Jean was sick of having to deal with Kayahan's obsessive calling, and rather than changing his phone number, Jean thought that offering impossible conditions would drive Kayahan away. Knowing how artists are particular about their musicians and musical elements, Jean tried stipulating every conceivable condition he could think of that would get him out of this conundrum. Jean first demanded to bring his own sound engineer, which would be a hard push for most artists, as artists would prefer to work with individuals they are familiar with, but to Jean's surprise, Kayahan agreed. Desperate to get out of the arrangement, Jean also demanded to have his own synthesizer player. Kayahan already had an excellent player, and Jean thought he finally had Kayahan where he wanted, but he eventually agreed. On his last leg, Jean demanded that he also bring his own accordion player, and this backfired as Kayahan wanted an accordionist anyways. And so, with no options left, Jean gave in and went to Istanbul. Jean arrived in the studio with his companions and met with the artist. The conductor that the artist chose, Umrit Erlohu, had written four arrangements for the team to choose. All of them were, of course, inferior to Jean-Claude Dric's musical genius, and when Jean played his version for Kayahan, the artist broke down and ended up hugging Jean. It was exactly what he was looking for. They ended up making a recording of the song, and awkwardly for Jean, the conductor was in the studio, and having all four of his arrangements rejected, he must have been embarrassed. Jean and his team got paid and returned to France. A few weeks later, the Eurovision Song Contest was on, and Jean gathered his team together to watch the show at his house. I don't know why they wouldn't have been in Zagreb, considering he was the arranger of the song, but things are about to get spicy. They, of course, wrote the arrangement in studio and had not heard the arrangement with a live orchestra. The Turkish entry came on, and the title card came up with the name of the entry, along with the name of the composer, the text, and the conductor. Jean thought it was weird that his name wasn't the one on the screen, but perhaps it was a glitch. Then he watched the performance, and gasps abound. The entry's arrangement was completely rewritten and was clearly inspired by Jean's rendition. Dun dun dun. Plagiarism at the Eurovision Song Contest? Could it be? Well, not exactly. It turns out that after Jean left, Cayahan at some point took Jean's arrangement and rewrote it himself. That's right, Cayahan completely ripped off Jean-Claude Dric and took all the credit. Although that credit ended up being very little, as Turkey placed 17th out of 22 entries, getting 21 points total. So Jean, in his usual fashion of making excuses for when his musical genius goes unappreciated by the juries of the Eurovision Song Contest, shrugged it off as a waste of time, and since he got paid for something that was never used, either live on the stage or in the studio version, he didn't really care and moved on with his life. Jean-Claude Dric would never return to Eurovision again, and he began to slowly wind down from his music career. He continued to arrange and conduct music in the 1980s, even winning an award from the French Association of Authors, Composers, and Publishers in 1987. He worked on a few projects through the 90s and 2000s, and in 2003 he formed a music group which plays big band music. He regularly performed at the jazz club Le Petit Journal Montparnasse in Paris's 14th arrondissement as of 2011, and was overjoyed to be able to freely play his favorite genre of music in his retirement. As of the time of recording, he is presumed to be still alive. We do know he got married and had at least one son, Nicholas, who was also a well-known composer, but other family details are unknown. And that is the story of Jean-Claude Dric, the music composer with one of the most extensive records in modern-day France, and the man who holds the honor of conducting the only North African entry in the Eurovision Song Contest. Before we close today's episode, it's time for Song of the Week. This is a part of the show where I talk about a Eurovision entry that I love, or maybe I hate it. Perhaps it's iconic, or it's pure hot garbage. Let's find out which entry is this week's Song of the Week. This week's Song of the Week is the German entry from 1969, Prima Ballerina, sung by Siv Malmkvist, composer, lyricist, and conductor Hans Blum. It placed 9th, tying with Sweden, getting 8 points. It got 3 points from Yugoslavia, 2 points from Spain, and 1 point from Belgium, Norway, and France. I am obsessed with this song. This song sounds so Soviet, like it comes straight from the Red Square in Moscow, and considering Russia is world famous for its ballerina scene, that doesn't surprise me. Prima Ballerina is a historic title used in ballet companies to denote rank amongst their members. Ballet companies still use ranks to this day, using more gender-neutral terms. Prima Ballerina was the second highest rank a female ballet dancer could obtain, with Prima Ballerina Assoluta being the highest. Prima Ballerina was the highest obtainable rank that a dancer could reasonably gain. They were the best that the companies had to offer. The Absoluta rank was more honorary and denoted absolute perfection, which is currently only held by 13 people in all of history. This entry is a cry of sympathy for the lonely Prima Ballerina, a dancer who sits on the highest pedestal of the ballet world but who lives a lonely life. Translation by Conrad Edler on the Diggaloo Thrush website reads, quote, "You look pretty in your white dress. You have to pirouette, but never in a pair. Tell me, don't you cry when the moon lights up the lover's smiles?" This is a lament to the loneliness of the Prima Ballerina, cursed forever to dance alone as others below her smile in contentment with their lesser talents, put together in love. She is alone as she dances in her superiority, and the song cries for her. I love this entry for the instrumentation and the sound of the sheer rigidness of the ballerina paired with the emotional cry of loneliness. She must not dance out of time, for she would be ruined, but her life is empty and already ruined with loneliness. The outfit that the singer is wearing is a pink ensemble, intricately patterned on the top and smooth on the bottom, almost akin to a ballerina. This song gets Song of the Week for so many reasons, from the Soviet styling to the tragedy of the lyrics. I adore this song, and I salute the sacrifices of prima ballerinas everywhere. I am so glad I finally managed to cover a conductor on the podcast, and I'm glad that the one I chose for this episode has such a fascinating story filled with so many musical connections throughout his entire career. I find that many of the people I cover have such extensive lives outside of Eurovision. As a Eurovision fan, I only typically think of people involved in the contest during the contest itself, and I pay little attention to them outside of that bubble. But when we peer outside, we find that Eurovision is just a small blip in a larger and complex web of experiences, and I'm glad that Jean-Claude Dric brought his musical experience to the Eurovision Song Contest, both for entries that I didn't overly enjoy, and for the perfection that is the Moroccan entry. Thank you for listening to this week's episode. If you'd like to get in touch with us, there are lots of ways to do so. You can reach out to us on Instagram at ESC101podcast, or you can send us an email, ESC101podcast@gmail.com. Be sure to follow the podcast on whatever platform you're listening on so you don't miss out on any future episodes, and be sure to leave us a review so other Eurovision history fans can find us. Next week, we are returning to the Eurovision Travel Guide, so be sure to stay tuned to find out which country we're visiting next. Mam nadzieję, że zobaczę me szef pisuis win tygodniu. You have been listening to ESC 101. See you next time.